Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from the last chapter of Canto 3. It's Activities of Kapila is the title of the chapter, and it's the wind up of all the teachings and the whole section starting from chapter 25. The chapter begins, the previous chapter ends. This is just text 13, so just a review of where we are. Previous chapter ends, Kapila Dev finishes his final instruction, and then chapter 33 begins, Devahuti, several prayers summarizing what she's understood, so it's summarizing the teachings. Her glorification of Lord Kapila, her very clear understanding of his position as the personality of Godhead, and his kindness to appear, Lord Vishnu appearing as her son, and the position of the personality of Godhead in relation to his creation and her. And then when that ends, Kapila Dev responds, and it's really short. He gives his blessings, and encouragement that she complete and fulfill, following all the instructions that he's given her. Then it goes back to the narrator. In this case, the narrator is Maitreya. Of course, it's go further back. It's Shukadev Goswami narrating, Maitreya narrating. He's telling a history that came from a previous yuga, Satya Yuga. And the hearer is Vidura. So Maitreya is saying, after these parting words, then text 12 says, giving his full blessings to his mother, the personality of Godhead left home, took permission from her, and left his home, his mission having been fulfilled. And that's it. We'll come back to that. So text 13, what Devahuti does, having been instructed by her son. As instructed by her son, Devahuti also began to practice bhakti yoga in that very ashram. She practiced samadhi in the house of Kardama Muni, which was so beautifully decorated with flowers that it was considered the flower crown of River Saraswati. Purport. Devahuti did not leave her house because it is never recommended for a woman to leave her home. She is dependent. The very example of Devahuti was that when she was not married, she was under the care of her father, Swayambhuva Manu. And then Swayambhuva Manu gave her to Kardama Muni in charity when she was under the care of her husband in her youth. And then her son, Kapila Muni, was born. As soon as her son grew up, her husband left home, and similarly the son, after discharging his duty towards his mother, also left. She could also have left home, but she did not. Rather, she remained at home and began to practice bhakti yoga as it was instructed by her great son, Kapila Muni, and because of her practice in bhakti yoga, the entire home became just like a flower crown on the river Saraswati. So that there's the main point, there's several other points. The main point that Prabhupada is pointing to in the purport is the culture for a Vedic woman that he repeated over and over and over, that during a woman's childhood and youth, she's under the protection of her parents, she's entrusted then in the care of a qualified husband, in the absence of the qualified husband, the care of a qualified son. And then comes this, what does the qualified son supposed to do if there's no protector of his mother? In this case, Kardava Muni. He's back in the forest doing his meditation. I mean, the whole thing is, from a rasa point of view, puzzling, curious, other than the understanding that Kardava Muni was setting an example. In other words, he's going into the forest to meditate on Lord Vishnu. But he's perfectly clear that Lord Vishnu told him, I'm going to appear as your son, so what's he going to go meditate on Lord Vishnu when Lord Vishnu is his son? He knows it. So why is he going to the forest to meditate on Lord Vishnu? And the answer is to set an example. And furthermore, Kardava Muni, the husband of Devahuti, is fully qualified, absolutely fully qualified, to give the same set of instructions as Kapila Dev gave to Devahuti. He was a perfected living entity with perfect knowledge and everything. So there was no need for the personality of Godhead to be the instructor instead of Kardava Muni being the instructor. But it was to assist the fulfillment of Kardava Muni, Kapila Dev giving his teachings of Sankhya philosophy. So now we have, you know, 8 chapters of Sankhya philosophy. And that Sankhya philosophy, another point, is the Sankhya philosophy is clear that it's Bhakti Yoga. It's not over there is philosophy and over there is Bhakti Yoga and you somehow have to like figure out how to put the philosophy and the Bhakti Yoga together. They're together. They're inseparable. Proper understanding of Sankhya philosophy is only possible through Bhakti. And he says it at the end of the description of the elements as they unfold and how the whole puzzle pieces fit together. He says that just a very short statement, but the purpose of all of this is to then, in that state of knowing that we belong to the category of spirit rather than matter, you fix your mind on Supersoul. It leads to dhyan, or the process of perfection in Satya Yuga is the process of meditation. But the process of meditation doesn't stop with meditation. It leads to fixing one's life while in meditation and not in meditation in devotional service to the personality of Godhead. So all of that is when we say Kapila Dev taught Sankhya philosophy. That's what it means. He taught Bhakti Yoga. Because how can there be realization of the personality of Godhead, the personal feature of the transcendence, without Bhakti Yoga? It's not possible. So it's part and parcel of. We say Sankhya, I'm just saying it again. Sankhya philosophy means he taught Bhakti Yoga. If you say we taught Bhakti Yoga, we should understand he taught Sankhya philosophy in the process of meditation and a lifestyle of devotion to to Devahuti so she could achieve perfection. Now that's interesting because she was already at the stage of perfection. What's more than what she was already had achieved? But she was like Arjuna playing the role, or induced by the personality of Godhead to appear to be bewildered, like Arjuna appeared to be bewildered, so that the Lord could speak Bhagavad Gita, or the Lord could speak Sankhya philosophy, or the teachings of Bhakti Yoga. So she then, I would say the important part is, aside from the cultural point, she applied what she heard. And she went back to Godhead from applying what she heard. She became, she's taking the position like Arjuna of being bewildered. And when she asks her question of bewilderment, Vishwanath, immediate next purport, says to the verse, Lord Kapila smiled. He says what he was smiling, he was thinking, why are you speaking like this? You're my mother. I'm your son. I'm the personality of Godhead, and you know that. So why are you speaking like you're attached and bewildered because you're attached? And but because you're such an elevated person, you're compassionate, and because of that compassion, you're concerned for the welfare of others, and so you want me to speak for the welfare of others. Okay. For your pleasure, I'll speak for the welfare of others. Now here, this verse is saying she followed what he said. It's not like she wasn't following what he said before he said it. Her husband was Kardava Muni, who was a perfected Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava, who saw the personality of Godhead face to face even before they met each other, husband and wife. And lived so many tens of thousands of years together as husband and wife, and then etc. He was already perfected. And she was also. When the when Lord Vishnu comes to Kardava Muni while he's not yet married, he said, I understand your desire. You wish to have me as your son. I will appear as your son. You'll need a qualified wife. A qualified wife will show up right here in the forest in 2-3 days, and she's as qualified as you are. She's a suitable person for you to marry, and I'll become her son also. So just say yes when the marriage proposal is made. So she was already perfected also, and Kardamuni. So it's an enactment of perfected beings being able to receive transcendental knowledge. Similarly to Maharaj Prakshit. When Maharaj Prakshit was the receiver of the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, it wasn't that he was less than perfect. He was fully perfect. But an enactment was there so that the perfect speaker, Shukadeva, could speak to the perfect receiver, Maharaj Prakshit. It's an enactment of the Lord's internal potency, in other words, these kind of situations. And so similarly, what she's doing is an enactment of the internal potency. She's fully complying with the instructions of living her life in Bhakti Yoga. All of it. The philosophy, the meditation, the lifestyle. There's a whole chapter, 27, in this whole series where it speaks of how a householder can live their life according to Kapila's teachings. So that's Satya Yuga instruction. Lord Kapila is speaking it, but the principles apply to householders in Kali Yuga and any Yuga. It's principles, and principles then need to be applied. So the Bhagavatam is giving that. It's spoken by Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning. Kali Yuga has already begun. So he's speaking about Satya Yuga for the purpose, for the benefit of people in Kali Yuga. Principles don't change. I mentioned this yesterday. Details change from yuga to yuga, but principles don't change. Bhakti yoga is the means. And the way that bhakti yoga is applied in Sat Yuga and the way that bhakti yoga is applied in Kali Yuga, may the form may look different, but the substance isn't different, the principles aren't different. I'm going to put that thought on pause, speak something else, and come back to the point. For example, some of you may have attended or have heard the recordings of the Exploring Varnashram seminar that we had in Gitanagari last Labor Day weekend. As you say in India, it was an eye-opener. It was illuminating to look at persons who have very thoughtfully, very thoroughly, very comprehensively, over a long period of time, considered and studied Prabhupada's instructions in the matter of Varnashram. And over here is Prabhupada saying, in Kali Yuga it's not possible, therefore we have the Yuga Dharma of Sankirtan and hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. So Varnashram is not possible in Kali Yuga. So we do that, another dharma, the Yuga Dharma. And then over here, Prabhupada is saying, I want to see Varnashram in ISKCON. Because, and gives his reasons and describes a bit. So, how do you put those, apparently, quite contradictory, you can't do it, please do it, instructions. And, in short, listen to the recordings, it's an interesting application of this principle that the form of Varnashram in Satya Yuga, as described here, or even the form as described in Dwarpa Yuga, the form doesn't fit Kali Yuga, but the principles don't change, and how to demonstrate the principles. You know, that's in part where the challenge is. But if we, the meditation should go, what was the intention of our founder Acharya when he said that and he said this? What did he want? What was his intention of us, his followers? And it's not just Prabhupada disciples, it's his followers, ISKCON. What did he want? What was his intention? Because it was very clear, it was his intention. Although he said it's not possible. So what is it that he was his intention, and then how to manifest his intention? It's nice to have a challenge and then try to fulfill that challenge. And it doesn't mean now we leave hearing and chanting and book distribution and Harinam Sankirtan and so many other things that Prabhupada gave us for the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Nama Yajna. Doesn't mean that. You don't abandon that. How does that and this unfulfilled instruction of establishing Varnashram, not just within the world out there, but within our society, how does it work? Because that was another question. Did he mean for people outside? Because there are some devotees, not a small number, that feel the instruction about Varnashram was not meant for the devotees, it's meant for the world out there. Organize the world out there in such a manner. But how's the world out there going to be organized if they don't have example? And from example, then persons can understand, oh, that's how you do it. That's what it looks like. That's not the idea is not, you know, get extreme and radical and do something impulsive and jump over there and do something else. But it's trying our best to understand what was the intention of our founder Acharya and little baby steps towards his intention, and read very carefully his instructions, the range of instructions, so we can better understand the intention behind the instructions. What did he want and how to do it? That's a for example. Now back to the topic here. All four yugas, bhakti yoga is the means of perfection. But we assign this, that, the other, and the fourth one is the means for perfection. Principal means of deliverance is the yuga dharma. But they all lead to bhakti yoga. They're part and parcel of bhakti yoga. Something similar to the little section in chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, text 39, chapter 2, Krishna says, I've explained Sankhya, now I'm going to explain Buddhi. And Buddhi is the intelligence that guides bhakti. So it's not two separate things, it's one thing. And there's elements of, and it's the one thing is bhakti yoga. Once that is understood, then a lot of confusion is taken away. What about, cultivation of knowledge? We're not supposed to do that. That's a misunderstanding. We cultivate knowledge in the process of bhakti. It's a subset of bhakti, not standalone. Knowledge for knowledge's sake, etc. We engage in meditation. People sometimes ask, in your process, do you have a process of meditation? Manmana bhavamad bhakto. It is a process of meditation. How could you separate what the mind does from the practice of yoga or the practice of bhakti yoga? You can't. But it's not a standalone meditation. So the integrating factor is love and devotion and service to the Supreme. So we connect all those things to that one thing. That one thing is nourished by or enhanced by or fulfilled by these other activities that are angas of bhakti. It's bhakti proper is the that which is being grown. So Devahuti did that. Then one other point. I think that's all I'd like to say this morning. The one other point is his mission having been fulfilled, Kapila Dev left home. Well, two things. Devahuti stayed at home. She didn't have to go somewhere to practice bhakti yoga. She stayed at home. And what was her protector in that situation? Well, primarily it's the instructions of Lord Kapila. That was the protection. It wasn't physically present, but she was protected by those wonderful instructions and her capacity to carry them out. Perhaps an important cultural point for those of you that have parents somewhere else and they're getting older, and so a cultural point is I have to do something. They're my parents, and it's duty of the children to serve their parents. Here's a nice example. It's not like this is the universal solution to that question, but she was protected. Before Kardama Muni left to go to the forest, his good wife, Devahuti, was entrusted to the care of his son or their son. And then he left. So isn't that irresponsible? Was he neglecting his duty of giving protection to his dear mother, who is all alone in the world and elderly? And you know that message. There's no discussion about it in Prabhupada's purport, but he did it. His mission was complete. So the protection was there, to repeat, in the form of the instructions given and her capacity to take shelter of those instructions. It's not a small thing, it's a big thing. But, also he's setting an example. And he left home. His mission having been completed. So now one other interesting message from Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami. It's recently been translated and published by the BBT, compliments of Gopi Pranadana once again. But Laghu Bhagavatamrita is a text that primarily is describing the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. One of the six questions in Canto 1, Chapter 1, by the sages of Naimisharanya Tusuta, please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So Chapter 3 of Canto 1 is a response to that question. Laghu Bhagavatamrita is a expanded response to that question. And one part of it just literally goes through, verse by verse, Canto 1, Chapter 3, repeating the verse, Rupa Goswami, repeating that verse, and then adding additional understanding from other Vedic sources on that particular incarnation, and so forth and so on. So when there's the discussion about Kapiladeva, because Kapiladeva is mentioned in Canto 1, Chapter 3, and here, of course, he's in Canto 3. He's in a special category of avatar, and the detail, I didn't look it up once again just before coming down, but he's in a category where he didn't perform many, many pastimes. You don't hear so much about Lord Kapila in other places. I mean, there are some, like, you know, the sons of Sagar that got, the 60,000 sons that got annihilated because they wanted to attack Lord Kapila. So he went to in the nether region, so to speak, in the lower planetary systems, and engaged in the same thing that Kardamuni was engaged in, the process of perfection. Yeah, he's the personality God. He doesn't need to do anything, but he's doing it. And so the point of Laghu Bhagavatamrita is there's not a lot of, he's not in the category of forms of the Lord that are, that you could say are Leela avatar. It's not so much Leela. He comes primarily, he speaks philosophy, and you don't hear too much about him other than that. So he says certain, some forms of the Lord are like that. And there's no marriage, there's no consort of Lord Kapila and others that are in that category. Although obviously he's Lord Vishnu, there's Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune is there, but no mention, no indication at all. So it's a certain, it's a certain category of avatar, form of Lord Vishnu. So he finishes similarly, the son, after discharging his duty towards his mother, also left. His, or in the previous verse, his mission was finished. His mission having been fulfilled, he took permission from his mother and left home. His mission was delivering Sankhya philosophy. His mission having been finished, he left home. So that's the primary, again, connecting with this teaching of, or lesson from Laghu Bhagavatamrita, that's the primary function of Lord Kapila's appearance. All these nice detailed descriptions that we just heard, or the whole section is describing. Any discussion or questions? Yes?
I was mentioned woman should be under the protection of a qualified husband or son, and we see a lot of examples from our Vedic scriptures. I'd like to understand one incident in Ramayana when Sita Devi was banished for forest. How do we understand that incident?
Neela?
As an example, how do we understand?
Well, the virtue of Ram is being exhibited. That's one. The virtue of Ram is, what's my interest? Is the interest is the instruction of my father. What could be a higher principle for me?
But this is after their back, and Sita alone was sent.
Oh, that's another. I thought you said, you know, why he went under the order of his father. He left. Why? Because to show. So now the other one is why he banned Sita.
Yeah.
That's what you want to know.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't understand your question. Well, it's multiple things. One of the qualities of the Supreme Lord is with one thing, he's accomplishing many things. So the most outstanding is the mood of love and separation. It's a lila for both Sita and Ram to strengthen their love through separation. That's the most outstanding feature. Another is the ideal king places the concern of his citizens above his own interest. And in this case, you know, extreme. For reasons we all know, Sita already demonstrated there's no contamination of her, and the fellow is, you know, a simple fellow that may not understand all of that, and why be responsive to somebody that doesn't understand all that? But it's a lila to demonstrate the ideal king places the welfare of the citizens, that the citizens should see their leader as unblemished. Like when Krishna was being criticized by Satrajit. Krishna in Dwarka was being criticized for having killed Prasena and stolen the jewel, and his reputation was being sullied. And so Krishna did something, because that's an ideal ruler, will do something. You know, sometimes what can you do? But he did something. So it's another purpose. Then yet another purpose is to wind up his pastimes. So Sita appeared to assist him in his pastimes, and so it was a setup for Sita to return, because he's going to wind up his pastimes. Now, it was a long time, but it was part of his lila to have Sita, as she appeared, to depart from his pastimes in that way, out of her feelings of separation, unbearable. She was able to bear the 1 year's time because with Ravana, because Ram will come and redeem me. But the other is unbearable. So that's another dimension. And then there's a fourth. This is described in Padma Purana. You know, the why question that you're asking, some people ask, and in Padma Purana, the question is asked and is given, and it's a whole chapter dedicated to the question. It's not the only answer, but kind of long, But you know, the short of the long description is when Sita was a young girl, she had a sister, Urmila, and Sita and Urmila were in the palace garden, enjoying what little girls do when they're in the palace garden, and they both heard a pair of parrots, male-female parrots, speaking, and they were speaking Ramayana, and this is Padma Purana, composed before the pastimes took place, was, according to Padma, for this particular version, before the pastimes took place, and the parrots were describing Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, and the daughter of King Janaka becoming married to Ram, and how he was virtuous, and this and that. So Sita was very interested in hearing what she heard. So she requested her friends to capture the parrots and put them in a cage. So they captured the parrots and put them in a cage. And then she started, "Oh my dear parrot, or parrots, please say more. You know, this question, that question, the other question. And where did you learn all this?" And they said, "Well, we were living in the ashram of Valmiki, and we heard the narration again and again and again, and so it just became part of what we remembered. We can only repeat what we've heard." And they repeated what they heard. And Sita had more questions than what they had heard. He said, we can't say what we haven't heard. So she decided that she would free the male bird and keep the female bird, who was pregnant, in the cage. And the female parrot said, I can't maintain my life without my good husband, and I'm pregnant. Please don't do this." And Sita was unyielding. So before the female bird died, she spoke to Sita, or cursed Sita, "You will have to undergo the same that I've had to undergo." Padma Purana. And she died in the cage. And the male bird, seeing his pregnant wife die in the cage, he also plunged into the Ganges and gave up his life. Padma Purana says, this is now a sage responding to a king, saying that living entity, who was the male bird, in his next life became the washerman, who spoke the words about Ramachandra, so that Sita, the curse of the female bird, would be fulfilled. That Sita would have to undergo the same thing that the pregnant parrot had to undergo. Now, who can curse Sita? And can Sita make a mistake? Can Sita do something that's so cruel? All of those things. It's a pastime. So that was the short answer to the beginning. It's just a pastime for different purposes. Anything else? Yes.
Kapil Muni left Devahuti, his mother. So under whose protection?
Under whose protection? I touched on it. Under the protection of the instructions. There were circumstances, for example, during Prabhupada's time when husbands died. And then the female disciple asked Prabhupada what to do. And his answer was, accept Krishna as your husband. He didn't say it's forbidden, but he wasn't in favor of remarriage. Accept Krishna. And so if someone can accept Krishna as their husband, they're protected. And they may not be able to, but in Devahuti's case, she was protected by the instructions.
Another question for people like us, what would qualified husband or qualified son would mean?
Oh, that's a major topic. Qualified husband, qualified son? Well, one's from the perspective of a potential wife of the qualified husband, the other's from the parents of the qualified son. I would, you know, just to keep it really simple, it's a sincere and dedicated follower of disciplic succession. Not, you know, not they score a 10 or score an 8 or, you know, wherever they are in their path towards Krishna. It's not making a statement about that. It's you know, it's a sincere and dedicated follower of disciplic succession. And according to that soul's trajectory of spiritual progress, they'll continue making progress if they're a sincere and dedicated follower of disciplic succession. Yeah.
You mentioned about this already, about you know, Bhakti Yoga was protecting Devahuti, and you talked also about situations like us, we are separated from our parents and their friends. So naturally, I'm not in a position to give instructions to my parents.
Yes, you are. You can just repeat the instructions that you've heard. You study Srimad Bhagavatam and repeat what you've heard from Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, your capacity of realization may not be Kapila Devs or Kardava Munis, but you're certainly in the position to repeat instructions that you've heard and invite them to similarly read or hear those instructions. Then that's the capacity that you have.
Depending on their capacity to follow.
That's another thing too.
So, with that, you know, so how?
It's a case by case situation. The how to. There's lots of factors rather than listing them all. Case by case. The most important of all is, physician, heal thyself. Or, you know, be sure that your spiritual well-being is in place, primary, so that the effort to serve others or assist others, whoever the others may be, is you have something to deliver. And you disconnect from that which is your spiritual well-being, you can't help others. So that's top priority in considering anything, whether it's this topic or anything.
It's woman protection. If in today's world, if a woman doesn't have a caring husband, doesn't really get the required protection, similarly from his son, how she should...
Again, it's a case by case. Just like this example, there's one example. Of course, it wasn't for everybody. Prabhupada didn't say the same thing to everybody. But in more than one circumstance, he said, take Krishna as your husband. It's case by case. There's so many particulars. You can't just, you know, a broad question like that. And it depends on the particulars. In principle, preserve the marriage. But in some cases, it's not preservable. And so, yes, case by case. You start with principles and apply the principles according to the case by case situation. It's Kali Yuga. Complicated. But again, in response to your question, same as my answer to his question, which is, first and foremost, preserving the connection that nourishes one's bhakti creeper. That's first and foremost. And that has, you know, lots of subtleties and details and so forth. But that's a principle that advice should be given, or decisions made should be based on that principle. So it depends on so many variables. Yes?
Suppose your parents are supportive for our devotional activities, but they want to maintain a distance and their own space.
Fine.
So how can I attract them more towards...
By good example. By good example. By achar. More than prachar. When affection can be displayed in a variety of ways, from one individual to another, and certainly from a daughter to parents, and affection can be displayed in so many ways. So if affection is displayed in appropriate ways, without uprooting or challenging or compromising this, one's own spiritual well-being and spiritual practice, spiritual atmosphere of cultivating Krishna consciousness, by, in this case, parents or any other person, sees there's consistent affection, something happens, heart opens. I was sharing this with some college students, actually twice in the course of this past week. I'm sure that there's, in speaking to the students, I'm sure that there's some teacher somewhere along the way that not only was a good teacher in the field of study, but there was something about them that you felt they really cared about you and they really wanted to pass on value to you. And so outside of the curriculum of the classroom, there was some exchange, and they said some things or did some things that is permanently embedded in your heart. And they're going, yeah. And so how many teachers have you had? But there's someone somewhere along the way that was like that. And when there's somebody somewhere along the way that was like that, not just because they cared, but the message was coming from a place of practical wisdom, and it moved you. So same, with parents or others. How can we, show affection in inappropriate ways, not inappropriate ways, but in appropriate ways, and the heart opens. And when that's there, then something can be transmitted. Bhakti can be transmitted when the heart is open.
So books, etc.
Whatever is appropriate. Whatever is appropriate.
And she was following the instructions of Kapiladeva, and she practiced bhakti yoga in the ashram, and that the whole place became so blissful.
Yes. How would we know?
How we can apply it more?
Well, you make your home Vaikuntha by Krishna bhakti.
Her meditation, her service to, like, meditation making. She was, basically, she was just gentle and meditating, right? Purpose of practice.
But that's the whole description of the previous chapter. She was doing all those things, not just chanting and so all those things, meditating. Everything was filled with proper understanding and filled with devotion, both. And because of that, there's that strengthened the relationship that already existed between her and the Supreme Lord, and the place became Vaikuntha. And like specifically saying is flowers. Flowers are natural ornaments of beauty, but we can understand the whole Vaikuntha atmosphere was manifest. It's something like what's coming to mind is 26 Second Avenue. 26 Second Avenue is a storefront, then the Lower East Side. But anybody that's been there, as soon as you walk in the room, you feel something. Or I visited Hawaii. I visited Hawaii because Vatsal was the president there and he was inviting me again and again to come. And I was really appreciating his dedication. I didn't have any interest in visiting Hawaii, but I was just like really appreciative of Vatsal. So finally, I agreed to go. And the room where I was staying in the guest room was in a long corridor. And then I noticed in the early morning hours, somebody would come and go down the corridor and enter into a large room and then leave. So I was kind of curious, what's in that large room? So I knocked on the door and I went inside. It was Prabhupada's quarters, and they were serving Prabhupada, changing water and flowers and whatever else they were doing. And as soon as I walked into the room, this vibrant spiritual potency just practically knocked me over. Then I saw Prabhupada's murti. Then I understood, because Prabhupada spent so much time there translating Srimad Bhagavatam, more at that place than any other place in the world. In Hawaii. So that, you know, it's a room. Like Prabhupada said, what makes this is in Detroit. And the devotees had purchased a wood frame house. They purchased it, not just rented it. And it was one of the early properties in ISKCON. And so Prabhupada was appreciating what they had done. And then he said, what makes this a temple? Because it was in a residential neighborhood. What makes this a temple and the others are houses? Because Krishna is at the center, etc., etc. And because Krishna is at the center, it's a temple. And that temple is not in Detroit, it's in Vaikuntha. Because of the Krishna Bhakti. Same. Devahuti's ashram became what it became because of her Krishna Bhakti. It wasn't just she went out and got lots of flowers and decorated the place. She may or may not have done that. But the message is it became spiritualized. Like Vaikuntha. The crown of flowers on the Saraswati. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Is there any doubt that you know this?
Yeah.